Caroline, Willie D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Stanley Cup playoffs are set. Edmonton Oilers taking on the Florida Panthers. And I'm a little bit upset we didn't get a Game 7. Those were two great series in the conference finals. I also think all Nashville Predators fans are breathing at least a little bit of a sigh of relief.
Because Vancouver.
That Matt Duchene will not be in the Stanley Cup final.
He did not score a point in that series.
Nope. So I think there's a little bit of pettiness going on. And I get it.
I think the question now, and this will be an interesting one, is because I listened to Elliot's podcast this morning. He seemed to think that there is interest on Dallas's part in keeping Duchene, but for what? Like, he was a great deal for them at $3 million a year, but he's a free agent. He's still getting paid by the Predators, so whatever team is trying to negotiate, say, well, Matt, you know, you're getting a pretty good check from Nashville. How about if you just take $3 million again or something like that? I'm curious what he's worth on the open market and how important he is, because Dallas has a lot of decisions to make, just like every team.
Yeah.
When you have a winning team and you're going for it, you usually have some tough decisions to make after the season's over. But that'll be one to watch. Where does Matt Duchene end up next year, and who's paying him what? Is he getting a multi-year deal? Is it a one-year deal? Yeah.
That's going to be interesting to watch. We've got the Oilers and the Florida Panthers now in the Stanley Cup final. We always talk about this in the NFL. It's a copycat league. Anytime a team wins a Super Bowl, that now becomes the formula. I think we see it a lot with quarterbacks. For the longest time, the model was be really bad, draft a quarterback with the first overall pick or at the top of the draft, and then that's your franchise quarterback, and ideally that quarterback gets you to the promised land. And then the Los Angeles Rams trade for Matthew Stafford. They pay him a bunch of money. They said F them picks. They invested a ton of money into their roster, and then the Rams won the Super Bowl. So then that became kind of the nouveau riche way to do it. That's exactly why the Denver Broncos gave up what they gave up to get Russell Wilson was, okay, this is going to be our Matthew Stafford. This is going to be the L.A. Rams formula for winning a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that did not work out. So then maybe the rest of the league, Deshaun Watson was kind of the same way of a proven quarterback, a more veteran quarterback, we'll pay him a bunch of money. Obviously, that didn't work out either. So that formula has kind of shifted. The NHL can be very similar. What does this team do? How did this team build their roster? What's the identity of this roster? How can we recreate it? Is it fair to say, Willie, that looking at the Edmonton Oilers formula for getting to the Stanley Cup final, let's throw that out the window because you're not getting a McDavid and a Draisaitl anytime soon?
Yeah, I think, and we've talked a lot about Edmonton and what they've done the last few years. Edmonton was really bad for a long time, and they failed on converting on some high top five picks for a while before they actually got it right. And, of course, they couldn't miss with McDavid and Draisaitl pretty much. Draisaitl was not the first overall pick. I think he was third. So that was a smart pick by them to get him there. And it's all been about, since they've gotten those two guys, how do you build the winner around them? And they have mortgaged the future, gone all in the last couple of years, and now they break through. Like, I think it's fair to say, without the Matthias Ekholm trade last year, they probably wouldn't have made it this year. He's been a really good return on investment. It'll be worth whatever they gave up to the Predators. And, you know, Tanner Molendijk is a good-looking prospect that they got with that first-round pick. We'll see where his career goes, but Edmonton will say, well, have at it. You know, that's what we were willing to do to try to win. Mm-hmm. And I would say, so that model for the Predators, probably not the way that Barry Trotz is going to go about it. They're not just going to be bad for 5 years. I think we know that.
And he's a special talent. McDavid is a special talent that you're not guaranteed to find a McDavid in 3 to 5 years.
Right. And I think Florida is an example of that. They had several high top five picks. Guys like Aaron Ekblad, who's a really good player. He's still on the team, but he's not a household name, right? He's had ups and downs. He's had injuries. He's still very good, but he's not a franchise player. Jonathan Huberdeau was second or third overall. Good player. They used him to get Matthew Tkachuk. I almost said Keith Tkachuk. That's his dad. So they are an interesting mix. Florida figured it out. After years and years of trials and tribulations, bad ownership, not a lot of fans, they finally got, I think, a good ownership group, a smart general manager, and they pieced together a roster that has got a lot of interesting quirks to it that we talk about a lot in terms of the Predators. Number one, they pay the goalie, right? He's Sergei Bobrovsky, $10 million a year. And they have found a way to have, I think, a much deeper team. Why are they winning? They've got more depth than the teams that they have beaten. They've got, on paper, more depth than the Oilers. I'm thinking,
which is crazy,
if you're paying $10 million for your goalie.
And 9.5 for Tkachuk.
And $10 million for Alexander Barkov, who is a true number one center.
How do you have depth?
That's the interesting part. So they have guys who have probably punched higher than their weight. Sam Bennett, Carter Verhaeghe, Sam Reinhart would be three to come to mind. That they're getting much more value than Bennett is 4.4. Carter Verhaeghe, 4.1. I think he's a great player. That's a bargain for sure. So you need to make up for it with some bargains. So I think that's a good point. Gustav Forsling has turned in way better. He's a late bloomer that's worth probably way more than 5.75, which they have him locked in for a long, long time. So it's been really smart. But I think the thing to take away, if you're the Predators, is can you have a deep roster that can score and still pay the goalie a lot? And we're talking $10 million for Bobrovsky. And as I keep pointing out, the cap is going to go up. So if the number is around 8 for Saros, it still leaves you, I think, ample room to build the depth if you're smart and make good choices. Now, on the flip side, what is Barry Trotz coveting from the start? What does he shine from the Batman building? The search for the number one center is out there. And the Predators don't have one. Barkov as the number one center, and the Predators almost had him. Like most mock drafts in 2013 had Barkov going fourth to the Predators. The Panthers took him with the second overall pick, and Seth Jones fell to the Predators. Nothing wrong with the Seth Jones pick. Right. I mean, most people had Seth Jones going first, but Barkov has turned out to be a really solid, great two-way player. He doesn't make a lot of headlines. He doesn't score 50 goals, but he is a great two-way center who can score but also shut down the likes of David Pastrnak, Kucherov, and in this series, Artemi Panarin. Like that's what Barkov does. That's what a number one center can do. Be a great offensive player, but also be a guy that you put out there to shut down the other team's top guys. So I can see a model where the Predators pay UC Saros and still have ample room to build top forwards, but Florida has the goalie making $10 million and the number one center making $10 million, and they have found ways to fill out a good, deep roster around that. It's a pretty good job, I would say, of how they put that together. Bill Zito is the guy's name that's the general manager. Got to give him props.
Good drafting and good coaching. Getting all the juice out of the squeeze of the lemons that you're paying $4.5-5 million. I think that's huge as well, because obviously you want to get production from the top of your roster. If you're paying a guy $10 million, he better be your star. He better be that elite forward, or he better give you elite level of production. But it's also about what's underneath. It's also about, okay, who are those, you know, maybe third line guys, maybe third pair defensemen that can still be incredibly productive for you. It's depth, and that's exactly what Barry Trotz talked about in his postseason press conference, was we need to be better in the top nine. Yeah, we want that elite forward. Everyone does. Every team in the league is searching for that elite forward. You don't find them very frequently. There's a reason why McDavid and Austin Matthews and guys like that make as much money as they do, and we talk about them as much as we do, is because they're special. And you don't find special players like that every single day. And the Predators, I don't think, want to be drafting top five. I don't think the Predators want to be that bad. So then what's the path? And my question, too, is when we talk about the Florida Panthers, we also have to talk about Matthew Tkachuk.
Yes.
And the trade that they made and how much of a slam dunk that was for the Florida Panthers. So is that Matthew Tkachuk trade out there for the Predators?
I think that the Predators have the ability to put together a package if that type of situation comes around. Again, they have the cap space to take on a contract that would be sizable. they have a number of different ways they could offer something in return. So let's not forget that Florida was the President's Trophy winner without Matthew Tkachuk. That was when Andrew Burnett was the coach. And the Matthew Tkachuk thing surfaced. They were willing to trade Jonathan Huberdeau, who had just come off a career year, over 100 points, and a pretty good defenseman as well in Mackenzie Weegar. So they were giving up two big pieces of a team that had won the President's Trophy to create room so that they could bring in Tkachuk.
It's a trade that Barry Trotz would call a little uncomfortable.
He was a little uncomfortable.
Trading up in the draft last year.
But it has been a home run for the Panthers.
Totally, no doubt.
By the way, you know, that trade wasn't looking great with about 2 weeks left to go in the regular season a year ago. They almost missed the playoffs. But, of course, they got in. They pulled the big upset over Boston. They went all the way to the final. And Tkachuk has been, you know, a good ringleader, identity guy, making $9.5 million. And, of course, he's a big piece of what they're doing this year. But I see a team that isn't like, you got to do it. Kachuk's got to do everything. Like, it's really a good team in the way that they are winning. They're winning with waves. Whereas I still see the Oilers as they got to have it for McDavid and Draisaitl, and they can't expect as much from their depth, although they had great team defense against Dallas. Yeah, the depth guys did come through for them for the most part. So all that to say, I think if a Tkachuk were to come down the pike, and Marner could be a guy like that, right? And I don't know if that's what you want. Like, Tkachuk has got that winning edge. I think he had that, whereas there's questions with Marner. But Marner is the type of player that is going to have a big contract, isn't out there for the taking very often, and so that is to be determined.
Right, because we talk about.
I don't see other guys like that.
Like, Natchez isn't a Matthew Tkachuk kind of trade.
No, not quite that type of player.
Reinhardt, I know that he's a free agent. But would you see Florida moving on from Reinhardt at the end of the season? And even if they do, is that even a Matthew Tkachuk kind of move? I don't think so. He's both really good players, Natchez and Reinhardt.
Yeah.
Are they Matthew Tkachuk kind of impact on this team? I don't know.
Reinhardt is an interesting one. He was the second overall pick. They got him in a trade. They traded Devon Levi and a first rounder. To Buffalo to get him. He had not been he'd been a good player in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Nothing close to what he's been since he's been in Florida, where he's had his three best years since that trade. It was a home run trade. And now he just got 57 goals. But I think they're going to – I don't see how they can let him go to free agency. But if he hit the market, he's going to make big, big bucks. Big bucks.
And
he's a little bit of a late bloomer for a second pick, right? I think a lot of people, especially Buffalo, are like, what's he done for us? We're losing with him. Let's flip it. Let's trade.
How old? So he's 28.
Yeah. Typical age of about to become an unrestricted free agent. Mm-hmm. But I would have to think he's a top priority for Florida to keep.
I would think if he's that pivotal of a part of the formula and the team
goals.
That got to the Stanley Cup Finals. But we talk about how rare it is and how hard it is to find a guy like that, a top elite center in the draft. They also don't become available very often. Like, Matthew Tkachuk was one of the exceptions to the rule of a great player, a consistently great player that was just unhappy in his current situation, and Florida said, screw it, we're doing it. Because a guy like this doesn't come available very often. Is Marner in that category?
Marner is going to be more expensive because of what he already makes.
Yeah. He's already more expensive than Matthew Tkachuk.
Yes, because Tkachuk, they re-signed at $9.5 million. And so that's looking like a pretty good investment going forward, especially what they already have and what I think they're going to – I don't think they're going to drop off. I think they're going to be a good team the next few years. Marner already making almost $11 million, so I don't know. He's a different kind of player.
Yeah.
He is a points getter. And I think the consensus is if you get him out of Toronto, you might see a little mental lift, a little weight lifted, and he might even be a better player going into the next stage of his career than he already is. But what's he like?
Are you going to pay $11.5 million for that?
Maybe. With the cap
someone
going
will,
up.
Someone
with,
will.
With the cap going up, somebody is going to.
Someone will.
Yes.
Now, and someone's either going to look
are they
like
gonna
a genius
wait it out
or a
and
doofus.
See if he hits the market
yeah.
as a free agent next year. That would be different than trading a Huberto Uyghur kind of combination, two established players off your roster. It's going to be a great – there was a long discussion on Elliott's podcast about Craig Berube apparently was seen in a coffee shop talking with Marner, talking through all the things that are – all the things that could play out.
Uh-oh.
It's going to be very – it's going to be a big saga. I think every week in the offseason. Does he want to stay? Like, what if he stays? But what if he doesn't have a new contract going into next year? The drama that that's going to create. Or the drama that you create when you say, I want to be traded. Or the minute you start shopping him around. There's all kinds of pathways it could take.
Berube and Marner in a coffee shop feels like they're asking for a little bit of publicity.
In Toronto? Yeah. I mean, that was weird.
Yeah, let's just meet up at a Starbucks in the most, you
nobody
know,
will notice us.
Yeah, in the craziest and busiest corner of the city. Let's go to Starbucks at peak time at 8:30 a.m.
So everybody can see it.
It's not going to start a conversation. That's not subliminal in the slightest.
Oh,
you ain't slick. I know what you're doing. You could have had a very private conversation and nobody had to know about it. Nope.
Exactly.
Let's pull up to Tim Hortons. And just
let's
sit there
ballet
all day
in the front.
Long.
Keep my car in the front, both of them.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a great movie called Soap Dish that Sally Field was in. She was like the soap opera star, but she's a little bit past her prime, and her ego was hurting a little bit. And her agent says, "Okay, come on, let's just go to the mall. You know, throw your sunglasses on, walk through." She just like needed a little ego stroke, so she going into the mall, and all of a sudden her publicist goes, "Oh my gosh, is that Sally Field? She's here!" And then all of a sudden, all the fans come running over.
Oh,
she feels so much better, like you're attention seeking a little bit. You're going to the
that's
Tim
exactly
Hortons.
What
stroke
doing.
That ego, stroke that ego.
Craig Berube says, "Look
how
much
Mitch Marner. We love you, Mitch. Don't go anywhere."
It could have backfired.
It could have backfired.
Yeah. Get the hell out of here, you bum! Get out of here! I do want to continue this conversation, get into your thoughts and reaction to now that the Stanley Cup final is set, how the Predators can recreate that. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. And in this past segment, we really focused in on Edmonton and Florida. Dallas is still a really great team that was still considered a Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah. And the Rangers.
New York is a great – Rangers. The Rangers are a great team that were very much so Stanley Cup contenders. Those were two incredibly competitive series. And I know they went six games. I know it wasn't seven games of back-to-back, you know, double overtimes. And it was just the difference of a hair. But still, those were Stanley Cup contending teams. What the Predators can take away from those teams, the Rangers, the Stars, and how the Predators can set this in motion this offseason. Things and the deals and the players that could be available that could supplement this roster. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMays, I want to give some Music City Grand Prix tickets away. So be caller 3 right now to win a pair of tickets to the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix at Nashville Super Speedway. These are 3-day tickets, September 13th through September 15th. You can also purchase your tickets now for the Music City Grand Prix at the Nashville Super Speedway on Friday, September 13th through Sunday, September 15th at MusicCityGP.com. As the race and station, 102.5 The Game has a special offer, and it's for a limited time. Use promo code GAME, G-A-M-E, for a 20% discount right now through June 16th. Caroline, Willie D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Looking at the team still standing in the NHL, the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers, but I think it's fair to at least expand the conversation to Dallas and with the Rangers. Because if you would have asked me at the beginning of each of the conference finals, I would have said, I mean, really? Flip a coin. Because those are all four really great teams. All four teams that I think we viewed for a majority of the season, and especially majority of the playoffs, legitimate Stanley Cup contenders. That's what the Predators are trying to be. And it's really complicated to say, okay, well, what do those teams have? What did those teams do? And how can we do that? There was an article on The Athletic kind of highlighting all of the goalie situations of teams in the playoffs. And it was like, okay, well, this guy's old, and this guy's young, and this guy's inexperienced, and this guy's really cheap, but this guy's really expensive. It just kind of showed how much of an inexact science, at least the goalie position, is. You expand that to entire rosters, it's a really inexact science. You can't say, okay, we'll copy and paste. It's not a formula. If it was a formula, everybody would have Stanley Cups. But just really, what you've taken away from, let's say, those four teams, and more specifically Edmonton and Florida, since those are two teams that will be contending for the Stanley Cup, what are the non-negotiables? What are the boxes that have to be checked?
Okay, well, let's look at the Rangers and the Stars real quick, because those were the number one seeds in each conference. Rangers were the President's Trophy winner. The Stars were the number one seed in the West. So they had the best regular seasons of anybody. How did they do it? Well, I think they both had pretty good depth. We talked about Dallas's ability to draft. That they had the huge home run, I would say, I call it a trifecta, the 2017 draft, which really was the basis of how they became a contender. And it's allowed them really to overcome a couple of guys, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, that were paid a ton of money that haven't really been up to that. They've been okay players, but it's been compensated because of how well they drafted. And then the infusion of the two young guys, Stankoven and particularly Wyatt Johnston, right? That are super young players that punched above the rate, especially Johnston. He, for 2 years now, he's been great right out of the gate. And he was a low first-round pick, sort of unexpected to be that good that soon. That's helped build the depth. The Rangers, how did they accelerate in a brief rebuild? They won that lottery in the bubble when they made the postseason, and the Predators were in this group. If you lost in the first round of the qualifying or you didn't make the playoffs, all those teams were thrown in there with an equal chance of winning the first pick, and the Rangers won it. So they got Lafreniere, who's now turned into a really good young player. So that helped their depth. That was a little bit of a stroke of good fortune.
It takes a little bit of luck.
Yeah, you need to be a little lucky.
The building process, the process to get to the Stanley Cup final, game by game, draft by draft, year by year, like,
yeah, takes a lot.
But
it takes
all, it's also scouts, right? Strategy. Talent recognition, evaluation around the league. It's very important. Here's to me the biggest thing about the Rangers and Dallas that I think is interesting here through the prism of what should you do with Staros. Jake Oettinger and Igor Shesterkin are both goalies who are going into the last year of their contract, just like Staros is. Mm-hmm. Oettinger is a little bit younger. Shesterkin is essentially the same age as Staros. You don't hear one peep from the Rangers or the Stars that they're thinking about trading them or anything like that. They're going to gladly pay those guys big money to stay.
Do they have young phenoms in the minors?
I don't think it matters. Goalie, I don't think they're
phenoms.
Even. Yeah, I don't think so.
I mean, but that's
it's not even a thought. It doesn't matter. Like they wouldn't worry about it. They're going to pay those guys big money to stay. Now, those guys have won playoff series. Soros has not. Right, so I think it's interesting that they have the goalie. They're not philosophically saying, well, we need to trade the goalie so we can open it up and have more opportunities to sign other guys. I think they are gladly going to keep those guys. Shesterkin kept them in that series against Florida. They were taking on a lot of water. The Florida Panthers were just the better team, I thought, as far as controlling the game, winning the chances, the analytics. But Shesterkin was keeping them in the games. So I think the Rangers are going to pay him a boatload of money to stay and then figure out the rest. So the whole philosophy is, well, you don't really need a great goalie. You just get by with a good goalie. When you have the great goalie, I think you're much more inclined to keep the great goalie, especially if you've had playoff success with them. So I think Oettinger and Shesterkin watch their negotiations over the summer, because I think they will affect Soros' negotiation. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And I think if you're Barry Trotz, you can say, well, Juice, you're great, but we don't think you're going to, I mean, you probably should slot in below both of those guys, right? So, again, you're trying to maybe get the best bargain you can.
I think it's a fair negotiation.
Yeah.
Look, these guys are consistent Vezina contenders, and as Soros could be in that conversation as well, but when it comes to playoff success, That's the truth. That's the fact. And it's not that you don't think that Soros could win a playoff series. I do that think that Soros can win you a playoff series.
Hopefully more than eight series.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully more than one.
He just hadn't done it.
But I think the point is those guys are – there won't be any thought of trading a goalie of that caliber. They're going to gladly pay the money and probably way more than $8 million in the next contract to sign those two guys. And I think that would be the smart way to go. So all that to say, I think Soros in the neighborhood of $8 million is – $8 million is not that much in the coming years of where the cap is going as far as the percentage, and it won't be anywhere close to the highest paid goalie because Vasilevsky is already well over that. Bobrovsky is already at 10 for the next few years. I'm very curious where Ottinger and Shesterkin get in their next deals, right? Ottinger is in the 4 or 5 range. Shesterkin, I think, is between 5.5 and 6. They're going to get big raises. Big raises.
10 plus?
I don't know. That's a good question because I do think they'll try to contain it as much as they can, but yeah. I got to say $10 million for both of those guys is in the ballpark, especially Shesterkin in New York. He could probably name his price. It may be well over 10, which is fine. So again, Soros at 8, it to me is not an overpayment. It's about where he – it's a fair deal, plus with all of the stuff that we talk about with Nashville, the cost of living, the comfort, the non-tax, I think that's a good value. And maybe it's a little bit below 8. So these will all affect one another, I think, to where I think you maybe in the coming years won't feel as bad as, oh my gosh, we're paying our goalie way, way too much money. Because he won't be anywhere – he won't be the highest paid guy.
I do wonder – how big of a factor, realistically, state income taxes are. Mm. When you're talking about negotiations, when it's getting into the nitty-gritty of 8 versus 8.5, how much of a selling point is that really? Because it's a factor, absolutely. When you're talking about the dollars and cents, when you're weighing the pros and cons of, do I want to resign? Do I want to hit free agency? Do I want to go there, over there? It's absolutely a factor. But how big of a factor is it really? Like, is it something that you thought about whenever you were?
It depends on the player, right?
When the money's that close, I think it then depends on, whether the player wants to be there or not. Mm-hmm. If you're paying me 5.5 and that team wants to pay me 6, okay, it's not much difference here. Where do I want to be? Because now you take taxes out of it because the monies are so closely comparable. It's not like, oh, they're offering 5 and they're offering 7. It's like, I'm taking a 7 because no matter how you slice it, I'm getting more. So when it's that close, I think it's okay, do I want to stay? How do I think my career is going to progress staying where I'm at now if they're paying me 5.5 as opposed to going somewhere else where they're paying me $6 million? I don't think you think about taxes. Much, unless you're coming from like a Nashville and going to New York or Nashville or going to Canada, then all of that plays in. That extra $500,000 goes a little bit further for me here than saying, getting traded or signing a contract in Canada somewhere. So
yeah,
I think some guys, and once it's that close, it's like, who gives me the best shot at winning and furthering my career?
I think I've tried to emphasize this. You heard Pekka say it. Pecorine in his conversation with Jared here recently, and Barry Trotz has said it. I think it is a factor, not the end-all be-all, but it is a factor that UC Soros appears to have expressed pretty strong desire. I like it here. Mm-hmm. I want to stay here. I think we can win here. That
and that's
does
what
mean
it boils
something.
Down to.
And so for that works both ways. That helps me if I'm Barry Trotz saying, okay, yeah, I'm more inclined to find a way to keep this guy at the right price. And UC Soros might be willing to give a little bit to say, maybe I'm not going to make the most money here, but it means something to me to stay here. And maybe I'll give a little bit and we'll find a good ground, especially
ground.
When the taxes. It will be a story for this Stanley Cup final that Florida is a non-tax state as well. Mm-hmm. It's already surfacing like Florida has benefited from having guys that their money goes a little further, right? Maybe that helped them. Get a couple of bargain free agents here,
or they could have just seen which they could have seen the direction the franchise was headed, and say, you know what, I'm going there.
Yeah,
and I think that's what some of it boils down to is if say, for instance, insert UC back in here, he said he already liked being here. Well, you know this organization. You know the direction they're headed in. Mm-hmm. So you're probably more than likely, beside taxes, to put that aside, but you're more inclined to stay because you know the vision and the direction for this team. You go somewhere else, you may not know that unless they are a consistent, dominant, winning team. Then, okay, you know going in, okay, this is what we're going to be. But if you're going and it's a team that's still building, well, I don't know what direction y'all going in. I haven't played. I'd rather stay here in Nashville. I know the direction. We're good. I know the direction. I play with all these guys for a considerable amount of time. Okay, I take less. But it doesn't necessarily has anything to do with the taxes per se. It's I know this organization. I know where they're headed. I know the mind frame. I play with these guys. I'm used to them. So I'm going
to
stay.
To the Tkachuk conversation of, is that Matthew Tkachuk kind of move out there for the mm-hmm. Predators to make in the offseason, which has proven to be incredibly lucrative for the Panthers. Florida was a President's Trophy winning team when mm-hmm. Matthew Tkachuk was on the market.
Right.
So
and sort of out of nowhere, but mm-hmm. they had become really good over the two previous seasons.
And how much of it was...
It's not like this rich tradition of winning, but all of a sudden they looked like they were a place that started to know what they were doing mm-hmm. to go along with the tax advantage of that. And obviously playing in South Florida, it's kind of a nice area. If you like the beach, that kind of thing.
Weather's beautiful all the time, it seems like.
But as a lot of people point out, they stunk for a long, long time, okay. despite all those advantages. So they're doing something in addition to where they're located to put together an attractive place. Just like I think that's what Barry Trotz feels like he's got going. He's like, we want to be a destination. We've got a good reputation, whether you're a young single player and like the scene that Nashville's got, we got that. If you like family life, we got that too. Like the reputation around the league is a good thing. It wasn't always like that, but it's like that now. And so I think Barry Trotz feels like he is an attractive place, a magnet to build winners. So you got options here. So all that to say, if somebody's offering a number one center for UC Soros, then obviously that's a game changer, right?
Totally.
That's a philosophical conversation that you would have to look at. But besides that, I think having the ability to sign Soros for a bigger, for a raise going forward, and still feeling like you've got the room to build a winner, I don't think is nearly the concern that it was a few years ago. I don't think Florida is worried about their goalie making $10 million right now. And I don't think the Rangers or the Stars are going to have any qualms about giving their current goalie a bigger raise that's going to throw them way past what Soros will be in his next contract.
And I think that one reason why Florida can feel so okay with and confident with paying their goalie as much money as they do is they've got the goal scorers as well.
Yeah.
That's the difference with the Nashville Predators is you got a great goaltender. You're looking for the goal scorers. You're looking for that guy or guys or depth with scoring.
Yep. They need more depth.
Yep. I want to get into your thoughts on this. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Matthew from Jolton, Texan says, I say Ottinger will get 8-9 and Igor Shesterkin could get 10-12. 12 is massive, but, I mean, New York might do it. I mean, that's how valuable he is.
And he didn't have a great regular season, for him, anyway.
Yeah.
It was a little bit, and they still won the President's Trophy. Mm-hmm. Like Jonathan Quick, mm-hmm. the veteran, gave them excellent backup minutes where they won a lot of games, but Shesterkin, when the lights came on, he was awesome in the playoffs. So his stock is sky high.
Sky high, and it should be. And I wonder, does UC Soros' representation look at it and say, okay, well, now our price went up because Shesterkin is making, let's just say, hypothetically, let's say it could be 12. That's a lot. That's a massive contract. Does that bump everyone else's prices up? That's the market.
It's a fair question. It's a fair question.
How the market works.
But I think if your Barry Trotz are saying, okay, you haven't won playoff series. Ottinger's won some playoff series. Shesterkin's won some playoff series. I still think there's a slotting there. I don't think look, his representation could make that argument.
Yeah.
But if I'm Barry Trotz, I can't allow that to sway me from what I think he's worth. Mm-hmm. I think $8 million is plenty. Is a good ballpark for what I think he's worth. Mm-hmm. All things considered, I'm trying to get a little bit under. Saros will probably try to get a little bit over. So I have to stick to my guns on the value of the player and weigh what somebody might be willing to trade me for him. This is why you always keep that avenue open. If somebody makes you a great offer and says, maybe that's more than if Juice wants to make 9 or 10, right? That's a different mindset.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got to make 9 or 10? Well, let me look back over here. Let's look, go through these offers again of all the phone calls we had.
Now, I think he would have to, if sort of the, you believe the ceiling is $8 million, somewhere around there. If he does indeed go somewhere else, they would have to pay him more than $8 million. Don't you think? Because say if he goes.
You're saying if he hits the open market.
Yeah, hits the open market, he goes up north somewhere.
Yeah, then you can get two or three.
They would have to pay him more money just to equal sort of the money that Nashville was paying him. Like $8 million in Nashville compared to $8 million in Canada or $8 million in New York, somewhere like that. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, that's
they would have to pay him a lot more money.
Ask for it.
Excuse me.
I would say if I'm using these people, I would ask for it. But if I'm that other team, I wouldn't feel the obligation to have to.
I said that to say this. The advantage is the Nashville Predators. Nashville Predators have the advantage in this, no matter what, because we can, even though we may not pay you. If we say $8 million is what we're paying you. If you go somewhere else without state tax or something else, they're going to have to pay you $10 million or a little bit more just to equal or come close to what we're paying you.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because if they're paying you
$9 million,
paying you an extra million more and a million and a half more, then here, after taxes, you still may get a little bit more money, but is it worth it in the big scheme of things?
Yeah, this was a big discussion with the Forest Break thing. Remember, there's some website you can go to and say, if I make $8 million in Nashville, what does that equate to in Los Angeles or New York? Or you put any city in there, literally, and it will give you some rough conversion of what that means with cost of living and all of that stuff. And it's significant, for sure, which is why a lot of the Canadian teams think that there should be a modification of the CBA because
I think there should be.
Because the taxes in Canada are so different than any city in the USA. Even though the players are paid in American dollars, the tax structure definitely puts them at a disadvantage.
You're still going to get taxed.
Now, you can probably get a lot more endorsement money playing for a Canadian team than if you're playing for the Florida Panthers or even the Dallas Stars. You know, you're just not going to get the opportunities that you get in those big, big hockey markets where hockey's everything in that city. You can make more money that way. But it's a really interesting question. And again, it comes down to what is the player's preference. And if I'm hearing from UC Saros, I want to be here, I think you got to be willing to work with them a little bit. But it's a good question of, is the market going to change? Because when the salary cap goes up,
the market will change.
Teams are going to have more money to spend in general. And I do think there are some teams desperate for upgrade in goalie. As much as we downgrade, I still think it is as important of a position that there is in sports outside of the quarterback in football. I still think it's an extremely important position. Now, can you have a guy that's not as talented rise to the occasion? Like Stuart Skinner is not a great goalie, but he's risen to the occasion enough. Even though he kind of lost his job, he was almost cracking. And he's come back and had some solid performances to get them to this thing. He's never going to make $8
million. The perfect example of that. Solid, not great, but rose to the occasion at the right time in 2019.
Right. I look down the road, too. We're in this cycle now where there's this little trend of, you can get by with a goalie making $4 or $5 million, and maybe he'll play great. You put a great team around him. I still think it could cycle back to what it's been for most of Stanley Cup history, which is you need a good goalie. A goalie is important. A goalie is just like a quarterback. Like, nobody makes a bigger impact on the game. Nobody can lose you the game quicker than a bad goalie performance in the wrong game. So I still think there will be a big value on goalies. So this sets the table for it continues to be a really compelling summer, especially we now throw Ottinger and Shesterkin into the mix of what's their next deal going to be. It's going to be talked about alongside of Saros.
It's going to be some tea.
It's going to be some tea.
Get your team signed up now to play in the 615 Open at Hermitage Golf Course on Thursday, June 20th. There will be delicious sample offerings from Prince's Hot Chicken, Bavarian Beer House, and so much more. So enjoy Michelob Ultra and other adult beverages at our sampling stations. Afterward, dinner is provided by Burger Republic. Sign up today at 615open.com.
The time has finally come. The deal I've been waiting for since I was a little kid. Being doubted my whole career, not being highly recruited, not being the first receiver off the draft board. This whole journey wasn't easy for me. First off, I want to thank the man above. Without God, this wouldn't be possible at all. To be given a gift to play football at the highest level, it's a blessing, it's an honor. My mom and dad, thank you. This is a journey for all of us. And y'all still with us every step of the way.
That was Justin Jefferson, who released a video on social media this morning right after the news dropped. He just signed a monster extension. This came in from Adam Schefter earlier this morning. Four-year deal, $140 million for Justin Jefferson. $110 million of that is guaranteed. So it's averages out to about $35 million.
Is it an extension?
An extension.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, so he's playing on...
He's playing on the final
fifth year deal.
Yeah, he's playing on
the
fifth year
of his deal. Yeah. And so that'll come into effect the next year. Yeah. So it's a 4-year extension, $140 million, $35 million AAV. So Justin Jefferson is now the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history.
I think we all saw this coming. Congratulations to him.
He deserves
every penny of it. But next in line is CeeDee Lamb. And CeeDee Lamb is going to get probably what Justin Jefferson got, or just maybe a tad bit more.
Jamar Chase is up too.
And then Jamar Chase is along the board. So he may be, the crazy part about it, he may be the highest paid receiver for maybe
a couple of days.
Yeah.
You know, it's a funny story about that. In the early 1990s, and in fact, it might have been 1990, Major League Baseball got a new contract. They had just, the owners got nailed for collusion for trying to keep free agents down. So
what?
They got
owners colluding.
They got busted bad.
Big time.
It was bad. So they had to compensate all these players. So on top of that, they got a new TV contract from CBS, much more lucrative than the one before. So these owners, they were, number one, they had to sort of make it right with the players. Number two, they had a windfall of money. And Ricky Henderson signed a deal with the A's. Ricky Henderson, of course, one of the all-time greats, but a real charismatic guy, not afraid to talk about himself in the first person and everything like that.
Charismatic is a nice word.
He signs a deal with the A's to become the highest-paid player in baseball history. But about 3 or 4 weeks later, 4 or 5 other guys blew right by his contract, and he wanted to renegotiate his contract.
Like, dude, you can't do that. You can't do that, no.
So I don't think Justin Jefferson is going to do the Ricky Henderson. He's just got to take it. Like, he's the first in, though, but he's got to know.
I'll take it.
He's got to know that he's setting the bar, and then others might surpass that pretty soon. But they were like, Ricky, it's guaranteed. You can't go back. Like, he wanted to hold out from training camp. Like, no, we just signed this deal.
We just signed it.
You just signed it. You can't do that.
It is crazy to see how the wide receiver market has evolved over the last couple of years. Like, when A.J. Brown was negotiating a new deal, what was the number he was asking from the Titans? Was it 24? Or was it 20?
I think it was 20.
I feel like 20-ish.
20-ish.
20?
Yeah, I think it's
20. I know Justin Jefferson's out here making $35 million a year. And look, I don't think A.J. Brown is Justin Jefferson, but A.J. Brown is a damn good receiver. Mm-hmm. So just over the last few years, that was the 2020
one
draft. Yeah. That was a 2021 draft.
No, it was the, because he's been in Philly 2 years now.
It was a 2022 draft. It was 2 years ago.
No. You got to understand, he spent 2 years with the Titans, 2 or 3 years with the Titans. I'm talking about AJ.
Yeah, and he was traded the day of the 2022 draft.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about his draft class. No.
He was 20. Yeah. 19?
Yeah, 19. 18? Yeah.
And there were a lot of receivers that were coming up on the same part of their contract that wanted to reset the market.
Exactly. Debo Samuel.
And they won.
Hey, A.J. Brown. The whose
mom? Was it Debo's mom?
It was Debo Samuel's was on mom. Hey, A.J. Brown.
But this, I mean, but this is, it's going to continue to go this way.
It is. It's not going to slow. I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon.
No, because they're making more money, collective bargaining. When they sign a new deal. In some years, it's going to be even more money, which means the pay scale is going to go up. This is just a cost of doing business. You know, next up is CeeDee Lamb, and CeeDee Lamb's going to get more money than probably Justin Jefferson. And, you know, okay. But, you know, guys like AJ want another deal. Tyreek Hill wants another deal because they see how lucrative the money is at this point. And they all were waiting on Justin Jefferson to sign his deal. Again, I think CeeDee Lamb may get more than Justin Jefferson, but that's not because I think CeeDee Lamb is better than Justin Jefferson. I think they're both – give me one or the other. It don't matter which one you give me. You take CeeDee, give me Justin. You take Justin, give me CeeDee because both of those guys are terrific.
Yeah.
But I just think it's the time in when you sign that new deal. I heard this morning, he doesn't deserve to get more money than Justin Jefferson. Who says that? Who says that CeeDee Lamb doesn't deserve to get more money than Justin Jefferson? It's when you sign it. Mm-hmm. That's who gets the most money. Jefferson signed his today, got his new contract today. Tomorrow, CeeDee Lamb may sign his. That may be a couple of dollars more than Justin Jefferson, but he's earned the right to get that based upon what he's been doing.
And I think the quarterback market is the perfect example of that, of Daniel Jones signing the deal that he signed.
It's just the way it is.
Daniel Jones kind of stinky. He makes a whole heck of a lot of money.
You have, because the sport has changed drastically, it has changed drastically, you have guys that are okay players making a lot of money, and congrats to them. Because this league has advanced, the money has gotten greater, and those guys are at the top, the Jeffersons, the Lambs, the Browns, Chase, those guys, Hill, they're raising up everybody underneath them with their contracts.
I want to get CD's reaction to the deal as well, kind of what that means for the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee Titans got to feel a direct impact of that on the wide receiver market. Teron Davenport will join us coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.